Chapter 23. When Herzer walked back into town in the late afternoon, his basket was half filled with slightly damp fur rug. The other half was filled with spring greens. He had found a large patch of asparagus as well as enough sweet leaf greens for a large salad. He had also found a patch of kudzi that had colonized a rock slip, and by the pool of water at the base of the rock slip they had invented numerous fascinating things that you could do with kudzi juice. When they got back to town, they could see that much of the town was deserted. Most of the people had gathered around the former fair area near the line of hills north of town. "Come on," Morgan said, taking his hand. "They've started the dancing." "Oh!" Pause. "Good." "Oh, don't be a baby," she said with a laugh. "All you have to do is move your feet." One end of the field had been roped off and a stage set up. On it, a group of minstrels, including the red-headed minstrel Herzer had seen the night before, were now belting out a fast jig. There was a large group of people dancing, but most of the people in the area were gathered in small groups watching and talking. There were some logs left from clearing the area and a few trestle tables, but most of the people sat on the ground or the occasional uncleared stump. Herzer and Morgan, hand in hand, wandered into the crowd looking for a place to sit, or, for that matter, anyone they knew. Morgan, not too surprisingly, was the first to spot an acquaintance. She waved to two women who were standing side by side, their arms folded, and dragged Herzer over to meet them. The slightly older-looking one was sharp-featured, short and well-rounded, with more womanly curves than had been fashionable. Her long dark hair was heavily curled, and in the slightly humid atmosphere had started to frizz at the ends. She glanced at Morgan and Herzer with the calculating eye of a raptor looking over a likely meadow. The younger woman was a shade over normal height for a female, but had the standard fashionable look. No hips, no breast, no butt. She looked at Herzer and Morgan without expression, and then looked away. "Hi," Morgan said with another wave. "Crystal," she said to the older woman. "This is Herzer Herrick. Herzer, Crystal Looney." Herzer stuck his hand out, and the woman just nodded at him, her arms still crossed. To the degree that there was any expression on her face, it was disdain. Herzer took his hand and ostentatiously clasped it behind his back, nodding at the woman with a smile. "A pleasure to meet you. Crystal, was it?" he said. "Shelley?" Morgan said after a moment, turning to the other woman. "This is Herzer." "Herzer?" "Shelley Coleman." Herzer didn't bother to stick out his hand that time. He just nodded his head at the woman, who nodded briefly and then turned to watch the dancing again. Morgan flushed at the apparent rebuff, then smiled brittily. "So what are you guys doing?" she asked. Crystal looked at her as if she couldn't believe the question. "Watching the dancing," the woman replied, slowly and distinctly. Morgan flushed again as Herzer nodded his head. He took her by the arm and drew her against him. "It has been a pleasure to meet you, ladies," he said with patently false insincerity. "I hope we get to do this again real soon." He stuck his arm through Morgan's and walked away, at which Morgan was forced to follow. "Bye," she said, waving. "I don't know what it is with them," she continued when they were out of earshot. "They're normally friendly." Herzer put his arm around Morgan's shoulders and gave her a half hug. I think the problem might be that you were with a guy," he said carefully. "What?" "Never mind," Herzer said, rolling his eyes at the sky. "Let's go find some friends of mine. They're at least somewhat more likely to be friendly." They walked around through the crowd until Herzer spotted first Shylin and then, sitting next to her, Cruz. They were parked along the stream at the edge of the crowd, leaning against some balks of timber. "Hey, guys," Herzer said, wandering over with his arm around Morgan's waist. "How's it doing?" "To the dogs, Herzer. It's going to the dogs," Cruz replied. "Who's your friend?" "Morgan, Cruz Foscue, and Sue Shylin. Shylin is like her first name. Cruz, Shylin, Morgan." Herzer set the basket down and first lifted out the greens, which were bundled in some of the outer leaves, then took out the blanket and shook it out on the ground, hoping there wouldn't be any evident stains. "Man, dude, you are always prepared," Cruz said. "Where'd you get the rabbit food?" "We went for a walk in the woods," Morgan said, and then blushed bright red. "Bass showed me some of the stuff that's edible in the spring," Herzer replied. "You can eat all of this stuff raw, but some of it is better cooked." He pulled out a stick of asparagus and nibbled on it. "Tasty, just like the deer eat." "It is good," Morgan said. finishing off another stalk of asparagus. "Em so guff," she added, munching on a fern head. "Ooh, plums," Cruz said, snatching up the fruit. "Nah, kudzi," Herzer corrected as Cruz's face twisted in surprise. "It's good," Cruz said, taking another bite and handing the rest over to Shylin. "Yeah, but you ought to watch that juice," Herzer said, straight-faced. But the comment still elicited a hysterical giggle from Morgan. "I need to visit the little girl's room," Shylin suddenly said. "Care to come with me, Morgan?" "Sounds like a fine idea," Morgan replied, dusting off her hands. The two men watched the women leave, and then Cruz shook his head. "They do that just to make us nervous. You know that, don't you?" "Yeah," Herzer said, "but do they know that we know? They're going to dissect us in the bathroom. You know that." "Hey, they're latrines," Herzer pointed out. "Unless they smell much better than ours, they're not going to stand in the latrine and dissect us." "Huh, good point," Cruz said with a shrug of his shoulders. "But that doesn't mean they won't stand outside. By the way, dude, I have got to ask you this." "What?" Herzer said with a crease of his brow. "Do you take a pill or something? I mean, give me a break. One day you're running around with a nymphomaniac wood elf." "She was not a nymphomaniac," Herzer interjected. "Whatever. She's like 3,000 years old and knows every position in the Kama Sutra." "Oh, 1,000, maybe," Herzer corrected. "And okay, the Kama Sutra is like primer." "God almighty, man," Cruz laughed. "What? Is it a pill? Give me some." "I don't know," Herzer said. "I was asking myself the same question. It's like, hey, it's the end of the world. We can get Herzer laid now." Cruz laughed so hard he rolled over on the ground, waving his hand in the air for Herzer to stop. "It's not fair," he said, waving a finger at Herzer. "You're not the last man in the world. It's not supposed to work that way." "I don't know. End of the world, all of a sudden women find me interesting. Don't ask me, I just live here. If there was a pill, I would have been taking it for the last 5 years. And besides, hey, you, Shylin? Who are you to talk?" "I've been working on Shylin for a week," Cruz replied in exasperation. "Your wood elf takes off, and the first time you come back to town, it's wham!" "I don't know," Herzer said with a shrug. "It's just my searing good looks." "Oh, please," Cruz replied. Cruz was just a shade under 2 meters tall, with long, wavy blonde hair, green eyes, and a chiseled face. Everyone in the society was good-looking, but even within that group, Cruz was on the high end. "Look, Cruz, don't tell me that you have a lot of problems meeting girls," Herzer said. "When I was growing up, I had a genetic problem. It made me act really weird. I twitched, I couldn't hold my hand steady, my head was always twitching. Nobody, and especially girls, wanted to get within 10 meters of me in case it was catching. Even my damn parents gave me my adult freedom at 14. By that time, I hadn't seen either one of them in more than 3 years. All I had raising me was nannies." "So what happened?" Cruz asked. "Well, thank goodness, just before the fall, it got fixed. By Dr. Dene, as a matter of fact."
"Edmund Talbot's wife?" Cruz asked.
They're not... I don't think they're married, but yeah.
So you know Edmund?"
"Except in passing, I'd never met Edmund until the other day in the bath. But I do know Dr. Dene, and I went to school with his daughter."
"Cool.
Well, I mean that, and a chit will get me a meal," Herzer said with a note of exasperation.
"Yeah," Cruz said, frowning. "But you know people.
I don't know nobody here."
For just a moment, he looked haunted.
"Hey," Herzer said, leaning forward and punching him in the shoulder. "You know me. You know everybody in Class A5, and you know Morgan. Before you know it, you're going to know everybody in this town."
"Now there is a goal to strive for," Cruz smiled sadly.
"But I had friends, you know. I never realized how scattered, but they were friends. Here, there's nobody for me. Nobody at my back."
"Yeah," Herzer admitted, but in truth, since he'd never had anyone at his back, he couldn't really empathize.
"Speaking of which, have you seen Courtney and Mike?"
"Oh, yeah, Courtney drugged Mike over to go dancing," Cruz said.
"With what?"
Herzer laughed. "Oxen?"
"Pretty damn close, man," Cruz replied, smiling. "Actually, I think she just threatened to cut him off." He looked over Herzer's shoulder and chuckled.
"Don't look now. The women folk are coming back."
"We going to tell them we're on to their secret?"
Herzer asked, raising one eyebrow.
"Nah," Cruz said. "Let 'em think they know something we don't."
There were still some greens left when Mike and Courtney, streaming sweat in the cool spring air, came walking back from the dancing. Introductions were made, and then Mike thumped to the ground with a theatrical groan. "That's it. I'm done," he said, waving his hands in the air and lying back on the ground. "This is a rest day, wimp," Courtney said, her hands on her hips and obviously raring to go back to the dance floor. "How about you, Herzer?"
Nope.
"I have a prior engagement with Morgan here," he replied, standing up and holding out his hand. "Care to dance, m'lady?" he asked, sticking one leg out as he bowed with a flourish.
"Why, certainly, sirrah,"
Morgan replied, snatching his hand and hoisting herself to her feet. Herzer danced with Morgan for nearly an hour, jigs and reels and square dances, until he felt he was going to drop. Somewhere in there he had partnered off with Courtney and at one point even with Shylin, but eventually came back to Morgan. After that dance, the female minstrel held up her fiddle in apparent surrender. "We're taking a little break now," she said to the crowd as she wiped sweat dramatically from her brow. "So should you." Herzer started to walk away, then saw Edmund coming out of the edge of the crowd. He put his hand on Morgan's arm to stop her, and both of them saw Edmund walk over to the stage and wiggle his finger at the female fiddler. She raised an eyebrow in return. Edmund's opinion of minstrels had become a standing joke in the town. So it was, with an expression of obviously humorous trepidation, that she stepped across the stage and leaned down to listen to what he had to say. Herzer wasn't close enough to hear, but he saw both her eyebrows raise in surprise, and then she nodded, at which Edmund nodded in return. He walked to the edge of the stage and motioned to someone in the crowd. The short, dark man stepped out carrying a set of bagpipes. The minstrel had gotten the rest of the band together. As the man carrying the pipes mounted the stage, she stepped to the front and raised her hands. "Excuse me, folks, we've been requested to do one more number, but it's nay a dance tune," she said with a rueful chuckle. She shook the piper's hand and waited for him to inflate the bellows, then nodded the beat. Herzer's skin went cold at the shivery sound of the pipes. He'd heard pipe music before and in general could take them or leave them, but this was unlike any tune he had ever heard. It reached down into him and grabbed something in his soul, something old and wild and terrible. His skin flushed cold, and goosebumps came out on his arms as the rest of the band joined in. Then the female began to sing, and with the first lyric, he was gone. Axes flash, broadswords swing, shining armors, piercing ring. Horses run with polished shield. Fight those bastards till they yield. Midnight mare and blood-red roan, fight to keep this land your own. Sound the horn and call the cry. How many of them can we make die? Herzer could almost swear he heard the sound of sword on shield and the hoarse bellowing of battle in the distance. He stood there transfixed as the song ended and then looked at Morgan open-mouthed. She returned it with an unreadable expression. "That was amazing," he said finally. "I liked it," she said, still looking at him with an odd expression in her eye. "But when you were listening to it, you looked really weird." Herzer thought about that for a second, then nodded, a muscle working in his jaw. "Somebody told me once that we all wear masks," he said quietly. "I think that song just strips some of mine away." Edmund had mounted the stage by then. He looked at the minstrel and nodded in approval, then raised his hands above his head for quiet. "Oh yes! Oh yes!" some of the people in the crowd shouted. Then, in the back of the crowd, there was a stentorian bellow of, "At ease!" "Thank you, Gunny," Edmund said, to some scattered chuckles. "I have some announcements to make, a couple of things to cover, and I'd like thank these, players here for getting everyone's attention for me." Over the scattered laughter, Herzer considered not so much what Edmund was saying, but how. The crowd was large and not entirely silent. Furthermore, there were no acoustical effects to assist him, but he somehow pitched his voice to carry all the way to the rear of the crowd. Herzer wasn't sure how he had done it, but it was a darn good trick. "Many of you are in the familiarization program, also called the apprenticeship program," Talbot said. "The final schedules for that have been determined and posted. They cover all except for the last 2 weeks, which are going to be military training, including familiarization with longbow and other weapons. This will be in the last 2 weeks of training, at the end of which you will be given your final scores for the courses, and masters from some of the crafts will accept applications from those of you who they feel have some talent in the craft. Also at that time, applications will be taken for the Raven's Mill Defense Force, and persons who have shown aptitude in that area can apply. For everyone who is in the apprentice courses or not, you should be aware that the portion of the agreement that everyone made when arriving at Raven's Mill relating to defense of Raven's Mill was not just lip service. One of the things that the Smiths are working on very hard right now is the production of defense weapons, primarily spears. Over the last 2 weeks, the town council has been working on a charter for Raven's Mill, and it will be presented next week. But one of the features of the charter that everyone should be aware of is a requirement that a person be skilled in one or more weapons of defense in order to be an eligible voter. At that, there was a burst of surprised talking, although not as much as Herzer expected. It was pretty clear that many people either knew of the rule or expected it to be included. Edmund raised his hands to call for silence and waited until most of the talking had died down. The only exception to these are those who can show that they have clear philosophical or religious objections to violence, in which case they will be required to take training in the care of combat casualties. Everyone in this town will be prepared to defend it. Many of you had things taken from you by force when you were traveling here. Others still worse problems, he said, gazing from person to person in the crowd. Historically, once bandits find that the pickings are slim on roads, they begin attacking towns. We will be prepared to defend this town. To emphasize this, Shida Gorbani is calling a constitutional convention with the intent to reconstitute the North American Union. It is my strongly held opinion, supported by Shida and other council members, that this requirement, to be capable of defending oneself and the community, be a universal requirement within the North American Union. The fact is that we are in the midst of a civil war. It seems right now that we are not, but just as we are recovering and preparing, Paul and his faction are recovering and preparing. At the moment, the council is fighting the council, but that battle is effectively stalemated. So, in time, they will come for us, and we will be prepared. You have all gone through much hardship, and these may seem somber thoughts for a day devoted to celebration. But they are important thoughts, things that we should all be thinking and talking about, and making our personal decisions, so that when the time comes for you to vote on these questions, you can vote with understanding and knowledge. And to tell you the truth, I think that's enough to put on your plate for now. You should have plenty to talk about. He ended with a smile. So, as soon as these, players get their breath back, you all go back to having a good time. Take care. He waved again and started to step down from the stage, but turned back and raised his arms. Oh, by the way, this requirement extends to minstrels. At that, there was a general laugh. Yeah? Well, I swing a mean fiddle case, the redhead replied, swinging the case of her violin around her head. Well, we'll just see how you do with an axe, Edmund replied, and stepped down from the stage. A crowd had already gathered around Edmund, so Herzer didn't feel it was the time to ask his questions. Instead, he and Morgan wandered back to the patch by the stream that had been claimed by their group. He's right. That is a lot to talk about, Courtney said, flopping to the ground and leaning back against the box of timber. Oof! North American Union, was all Cruz said, shaking his head. Yeah, that's some deep stuff, Mike agreed. Well, I don't think that it's right that everyone should have to use weapons, Morgan said angrily. I don't have any interest in killing people, or even hurting them. What if they are interested in hurting you? Shylin asked quietly. Why would they hurt me? Morgan challenged. What have I done to them? If everyone starts getting ready for a fight, sooner or later you're going to have one. People don't have to have a reason to hurt other people, Herzer said. They just have to be the kind of people that enjoy it. Shylin looked at him oddly for a moment, then nodded. Listen to Herzer, she said. I take it you had trouble on the trip? Courtney asked. Yeah, Shylin replied sharply. What happened? Morgan asked. I do not choose to discuss it, Shylin said. She wrapped her arms around her knees, pulling them tight to her and looking into the distance. Cruz's face tightened as a muscle worked in his jaw. Then he looked off to the side. I'm sorry, Shylin, Morgan said. I'm sorry for whatever happened to you. But I still don't agree. Violence never settles anything. Herzer snorted and tried unsuccessfully to turn it into a laugh.
What?
Morgan snapped. Sorry, he said, still trying not to laugh. I was just thinking. Maybe you ought to ask the Melkon AI if violence ever settles anything. Or the Carthaginian Senate. Or the Islamic Jihad.
What are you talking about? Morgan asked.
Have you ever heard of the Melkon AI?
Yes, I've heard of the Melkon AI.
Does it still exist? Herzer asked with a smile.
No, it was destroyed in the AI wars, Morgan said, standing up and putting her hands on her hip.
But this is the 41st century, not the 31st. Surely we've risen above that. Wrestling in wars like boys on a playground?
This we defend, Herzer said, shaking his head.
Or not, as the case may be, he continued, looking at Shylin.
What he is trying to say is, people have always been violent, Courtney interjected. There have always been wars, and as long as we stay human beings, there will always be wars. The period of the last 1,000 years was a golden age, and it would be nice to go back to that. But if the cost of going back to that is letting Paul decide what is right and wrong, you can try to limit it by diplomacy, but the diplomacy has already broken down. It broke down in the council hall, when Paul attacked Shida.
Well, we only have her word for that, Morgan pointed out.
Oh, good God, Courtney replied, throwing her hands up in the air.
Herzer, you try.
Nope, ain't gonna do it, Herzer replied.
Morgan, you can say that you just want to sit this out. That's fine. But people aren't going to let you sit it out. You can choose to leave Raven's Mill. I'm sure that there are going to be communities that are not going to enforce the requirements. You can even say that you have strongly held philosophical objections and trained to handle casualties. But if you go elsewhere, to a community that says they just want to be neutral, or violence never settles anything, sooner or later Paul's forces will take you over and not ask your opinion. Or you'll be in the way of Shida's forces, and they'll take you over and not ask your opinion. I, for one, am not going to let Paul Bauman tell me how to run my life. I know enough history to understand what that road leads to. And I would rather sit here on the ground in the rain and eat maggoty bread than allow him to gain absolute power over Mother.
But there's no way to fight him, Morgan said. He's a council member. They're all council members. Let them fight.
It's stalemated, Herzer said with a shrug, and Bauman wants the entire world under his sway. He is going to come for you, Morgan, and for me and Shylin, because he thinks it's the right thing to do. It's his mission in life. You can sit on one side or you can sit on the other, but if you sit in the middle, you're just going to get trampled.
That's just paranoia, Morgan said, stamping her foot. You're all warmongers, and you can just go to hell, Herzer Herrick.
With that, she stomped away.
Not bad, Romeo, Crew said, leaning back.
Pick her up in the morning. Have your way with her all afternoon, and she's gone by evening.
Not bad.
Shylin took this opportunity to hit him in the shoulder as hard as she could with a week's worth of built-up muscle.
Ow! Jeez!
Less than you deserve, Courtney said.
I was just joking,
Cruz replied, rubbing his arm.